The New Testament reading is from Mark chapter 14, verses 32 to 42. And as Steve said, on page 1021 of the Church Bibles. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little further, he fell to the ground and prayed that, if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Once more he went away and prayed the same thing. Then he came back. He again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They didn't know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." This is the word of the Lord.
I think we've got the second reading on the slide. Here we go. Lamentations. It should be chapter 4. Not chapter 3. If you could drop that one, please. But the page number is right. Yeah, it is 828, but it's Lamentations chapter 4. So chapter 4, beginning at verse 1. "How the gold has lost its luster, the fine gold become dull. The sacred gems are scattered at every street corner. How the precious children of Zion, once worth their weight in gold, are now considered as pots of clay, the work of a potter's hands. Even jackals offer their breasts to nurse their young, but my people have become heartless like ostriches in the desert. Because of thirst, the infant's tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth. The children beg for bread, but no one gives it to them. Those who once ate delicacies are destitute in the streets. Those brought up in royal purple now lie on ash heaps. The punishment of my people is greater than that of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment without a hand turned to help her. Their princes were brighter than snow and whiter than milk, their bodies more ruddy than rubies, their appearance like lapis lazuli. But now they are blacker than soot. They are not recognized in the streets. Their skin has shriveled on their bones. It has become as dry as a stick. Those killed by the sword are better off than those who die of famine. Racked with hunger, they waste away for lack of food from the field. With their own hands, compassionate women have cooked their own children, who became their food when my people were destroyed. The Lord has given full vent to his wrath. He has poured out his fierce anger. He kindled a fire in Zion that consumed her foundations. The kings of the earth didn't believe, nor did any of the peoples of the world, that enemies and foes could enter the gates of Jerusalem. But it happened because of the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests, who shed within her the blood of the righteous. Now they grope through the streets as if they were blind. They are so defiled with blood that no one dares to touch their garments. 'Go away, you're unclean,' people cry to them. 'Away, away, don't touch us.' When they flee and wander about, people among the nations say, 'They can stay here no longer.' The Lord himself has scattered them. He no longer watches over them. The priests are shown no honor, the elders no favor. Moreover, our eyes failed, looking in vain for help. From our towers we watched for a nation that could not save us. People stalked us at every step, so we could not walk in our streets. Our end was near, our days were numbered, for our end had come. Our pursuers were swifter than eagles in the sky. They chased us over the mountains and lay in wait for us in the desert. The Lord's anointed, our very life breath was caught in their traps. We thought that under his shadow we would live among the nations. Rejoice and be glad, daughter Edom, you who live in the land of Uz. But to you also the cup will be passed. You will be drunk and stripped naked. Your punishment will end, daughter Zion. He will not prolong your exile. But he will punish your sin, daughter Edom, and expose your wickedness. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, it's an extraordinary chapter in the Bible, isn't it? Particularly verse 10, a very shocking verse there about mothers cooking their children. It's a shocking thing. It's here in the Bible as a very serious warning for us. So the challenge is, will we pay attention? Will we listen? I want to remind us of where this part of the Bible fits in the big story. So I've got a slide with some labels that come up to remind us the background here. It begins, the Bible begins, we know, with the creation of the universe. God created all things. And then very early in the Bible, humans decide that God can't be trusted. And they rebel, which is what the Bible calls sin. God's response is he punishes humans and the world is cursed. And that is the Bible's explanation for sickness and for war and for death. People around us in the world have got all sorts of other explanations for those things. But the Bible says these come because our world has been twisted and spoilt through people thinking we know better than God. That is the great problem behind it all. Brilliantly, God is a loving and generous God, and he makes a promise to a man called Abraham. Promises to Abraham a new start, new life with God in the promised land. And he says if his people trust, they'll enjoy that life, but if they do not trust, they will be thrown out. Time and time again through the history of the people of Abraham, they distrust him, and they are punished. He puts up with them, he leads them through the wilderness, rescues them from Egypt, takes them through the wilderness, brings them into the promised land, if you know those episodes. But in the end, ultimately, he says, you've had enough warnings, enough chances, and he throws them out of Jerusalem. So the place, I think, is so Abraham's people sin, and then God punishes. And that's where God's lamentation. It's the time when the city of Jerusalem, the place of worshipping God, it's surrounded, it's invaded. It's not a story. It's not a book about the modern city of Jerusalem and all the political situation that we read about today or hear about today. That's very different. This is about when God was at work using his people in that particular place. And with the coming of Jesus, Jerusalem has lost that special place that it had in the Old Testament. So that's all the background. And on the next slide, please. Here we go, the outline of where we're going today. Lamentations chapter 4, the shocking suffering of God's people. God punished them because of their leader's sin, and God's punishment for sin will end, and then some lessons afterwards. So the shocking suffering of God's people in the first verses. And the way this comes across is in a series of reversals for the people. The precious, valuable ones are now worthless. The privileged ones are now on the rubbish heap. And those who provided safety and nurture are now destroyers. So verse 1, how the gold has lost its luster, the fine gold become dull, the sacred gems are scattered at every street corner. Now apparently the thing about pure gold is it doesn't lose its shine, but perhaps this is the gold that's been taken from the temple and chucked in the street, covered in dust. But verse 2 tells us that this gold and these precious stones, actually it's not the bits of the building, it's the children. Verse 2, how the precious children of Zion, once worth their weight in gold, are now considered as pots of clay, the work of a potter's hands. Worth their weight in gold. I don't have bars of gold in my house, so I know that gold is very valuable. Now think about a child's weight, that much gold, that's an awful lot of value. It's saying how special these children were. You think of parents holding a newborn baby or see them greeting their children at the school gate at the end of the day. How precious they are But now they've become like cheap pots. It's a reversal. Verse 3, the people have become heartless. Even jackals offer their breasts to nurse their young, but my people have become heartless, like ostriches in the desert that were renowned for not looking after their chicks. In verse 4, no one cares for the children. No one shares their bread with them. Because of the thirst, the infant's tongue sticks to the roof of its mouth. The children beg for bread, but no one gives it to them. Now there's another reversal in verse 5. The ones who ate rare and expensive foods and dressed in fine clothing and now share the same trouble as those children. Verse 5. Those who once ate delicacies are destitute in the streets. Those brought up in royal purple now lie on ash heaps. Now, the people today we'd think of who have those super expensive cars with someone driving the car for them, gold watches, meeting up at the best restaurants, their faces in the newspapers as they go into the theatres or the clubs. Now they're amongst the burnt rubbish. What a reversal. The reversal is described again in colours in verses 7 and 8. Their princes were brighter than snow and whiter than milk. Their bodies more ruddy than rubies. Their appearance like lapis lazuli. But now they're blacker than soot. They're not recognized in the streets. Their skin has shriveled on their bones and has become as dry as a stick. So the skin has gone from milk white to soot black. Bodies were ruddy and now have skin like dry trees. The people who are known by everyone are now not known by anyone, unrecognized. And the final and the worst reversal is in verse 10. With their own hands, compassionate women have cooked their own children. Now, in their normal way of life, mother's strongest instinct is to care for their children. What they're doing is unthinkable. Did it really happen? Well, we don't know. It might be that this is picture language in the Bible. But it's a picture language of a terrible reversal, a terrible upset of the normal way of things. The city is starving. The children are neglected. The children, the privileged adults, the mothers are all affected. And it's plain to see in the streets. In verse 2, the children are tossed into the streets. In verse 2, and verse 5, the once wealthy people are begging in the streets. And in verse 8, the great ones are now nobodies in the streets. It's out there in public. Everyone sees it. Why is this in the Bible? How does it help me and you to know God and know life? Do we need another description of terrible suffering? You can find it any time on your internet feed or on the newspaper. Ukraine, refugees in the Channel, Gaza, plenty of other places. Why do we need it in the Bible? Well, what is special about this chapter is it's the shocking suffering of God's people. They're called my people. Verse 6, the punishment of my people. It's at the end of verse 10. With their own hands, compassionate women have cooked their own children who became their food when my people were destroyed. This is the people God chose. And now their spokesman is saying, my people are suffering like this. It's extraordinary because God's people had a special place in the world. They were meant to be an advertising board to the world. Look at what it's like when a community, when a people have God with them. Look at what a life they have. They had the temple in Jerusalem, God's palace on earth. But it's all lost and the people are crushed. So yes, it's another shocking story of suffering. But it isn't just another shocking story of suffering. It's for the people God chose. So why did it happen? Now we read in the next verses, it's God's punishment of his people because of their sinful leaders. So we've got the shocking suffering of God's people. It's God's punishment because of their leaders' sin. No one believed Jerusalem could be taken. No enemy could get into the gates of that city, verse 12. The kings of the earth did not believe, nor did any of the peoples of the world, that enemies and foes could enter the gates of Jerusalem. But they did. Why? Verse 11. The Lord has given full vent to his wrath. He has poured out his fierce anger. That is why it's come. It's come from God. And verse 13 tells us why it's come from God. But it happened because of the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priests, who shed within her the blood of the righteous. And there are more reversals in this explanation of why the suffering comes. That it's the wickedness of the leaders. Verse 14, they grope through the streets as if they were blind. These are the prophets, and another name for prophets in the Old Testament is the seers. It's a word, it sounds like it means like it sounds, the people who see things. And the prophets are the ones who can see, they see the situation. But these seers are now blind, they're fumbling along the streets to find their way. Another reversal, they're so defiled with blood that no one dares to touch their garments. These were the holy ones who couldn't touch impure things, but now they have become impure, so no one wants to get near them. In verse 15, go away, you're unclean, people cry to them. Away, away, don't touch us. Their people reject them as dirty. They don't want to touch them because they're going to get contaminated. These are the people who are supposed to be looking after the people of Israel to keep them pure and keep them safe. But they're now the cause of dirtiness. It's like when judges are corrupt. You know, judges are meant to organize justice, but if they're actually taking bribes, it's completely the wrong way. Or parents are meant to care for children, but if parents abuse their children, it's completely reversed. Or doctors are meant to heal the sick, but if doctors and nurses are actually going out of their way to kill people, it's a reversal. Police are meant to catch the criminals, but if the police are the criminals, what hope is there? And that's what we've got in this situation for God's people, that the religious leaders are rotten and the cause of trouble. The people desperately looked for hope, or for help, verse 17. Moreover, our eyes failed, looking in vain for help. They looked and looked, but it was pointless. The phrase we sometimes use, there's no cavalry coming. There's no army going to come around and help them. They put their hope in other people, but there's no one there to help. The problem is they put their hope in other people, but not in God. They've not been relying on him. And so no one came, and instead the city is overwhelmed. Verse 19. Our pursuers were swifter than eagles in the sky. They chased us over the mountain and lay in wait for us in the desert. Even the king was helpless. Verse 20. The Lord's anointed. That word means Christ or Messiah. So it's not just any member of God's people. It's the Lord's king. Our very breath, our very life breath, was caught in their traps. We thought that under his shadow we would live among the nations. So the life of the people depended on him. He was the one who was going to keep them safe. It was like our governments who organise our economy and ensure the health system, and the army that keeps our nations safe. The king was all of those put together for them. They thought, like a hot tree, he would give them protective shade. But he can't even protect himself. He's like a frightened animal in a trap. It says there, the Lord's anointed, our very life breath, was caught in their traps. So this chapter tells us the shocking suffering of God's people then, that God punished his people because of their sinful leaders. Why is this in the Bible? How does this help us know God and help and know life? It's part of the picture in the Old Testament that says God's people needed more than the things they were relying on. The outward signs didn't mean that they were in a good relationship with God. They had the city of God. They had the temple in Jerusalem. They had the king. It seemed the families were blessed with children, much loved, more precious than gold. The wealthy people could enjoy beautiful food. Their leaders were beautiful leaders in their appearance. They had religious leaders teaching and serving at the temple and the king given by God. But this was all lost in a great reversal. And it shows that what God's people really needed was not just those things we could see and describe. Life with God is, there's something deeper, more significant than those outward things. It's about a right heart with God. And it depends on the Lord's anointed who came for us. It's about a right heart with God, and it depends on the Lord's anointed who came for us, on Jesus. So now Jesus has come, we're in a situation where we can have that true life with God. Jesus came as the Lord's anointed to make life with him that will not be lost. And he came to change us within. So it's right for us to thank God that he has sent Jesus to give us a life that can't be lost like this in this terrible, horrific reversal. He has sent Jesus so that we can be changed to know God. We may not have these outward signs of prosperity and life with God, but we have life with him if we put our trust in Jesus. So for me, how this practical application for me is, I mustn't take confidence in the external thing or the superficial thing of being a vicar. You know, I think, oh, it's okay, everything's all right with me and God because I'm the vicar. Well, that job will be taken away from me one day. And what will happen to me then as a Christian? My Christian life is deeper than that. It's not just about being a vicar. It must be more significant than that. We must not envy other churches around us that look big and successful, with large numbers of people crowding in, with a really powerful social media presence, stories of their programs that change the district around them. Those are all great things if they happen. But do they have God? Hopefully they do. But that's what we should hunger for, to have something that we can't be taken away like those things can be. The life that we have with God is about a right heart with him, and it depends on the Lord's anointed, Jesus, who came for us. That's picked up in the very last strange verses at the end, or surprising verses at the end of chapter 4. God's punishments for sin will end in verses 21 and 22. These words are sort of sarcastic. Rejoice and be glad. You know, go on. Rejoice and be glad, daughter Edom, you who live in the land of Uz. But to you also the cup will be passed. You will be drunk and stripped naked. Your punishment will end, daughter Zion. He will not prolong your exile. But he will punish your sin, daughter Edom, and expose your wickedness. So the poet at the end here, speaking to two different groups, daughter Zion and daughter Edom. The daughter Zion is the people of Jerusalem, people of Abraham. Daughter Edom is a neighboring country. And they were rejoicing and they were being glad when they saw all the trouble that happened to the people of Israel. It's like a neighboring nation. They see a mighty empire come and invade Jerusalem. And they laugh about it. And they say, this is great. In fact, while this is happening, we can go and snatch some stuff for ourselves. So the closest thing that's happened recently is when Russia invaded Ukraine. And Belarus, another small country next to Ukraine, has helped Russia. You know, and taken advantage of it. It's that sort of situation. So the Bible is saying to those people in Edom, you enjoy laughing while you can, because you will face God's judgment soon enough. The exile, the punishment for God's people, will come to an end. Now, this is the last of the reversals in the chapter. It's a surprising reversal. It's all of those other reversals where all the privileges were lost, you know, the comfortable were uncomfortable, the precious became worthless, and so on. But this is a reversal. So it looks like Edom is rejoicing and glad, and Israel is losing and sad, but that will be reversed. How will that be? What we've got in this verse is this phrase, the cup. God's anger in the Old Testament is described as drinking a cup of wine that makes people stagger with drunkenness and causes then great distress to them. That's one of the pictures in the Old Testament of God's wrath. And it looks like the cup is going on to Israel. But actually, no, Edom is going to have to take it. Jesus, the night before he died, in the words that Karen read, he prayed to the Father, didn't he? Let me not have to drink this cup if I can avoid it, but if it's your will, I will. And so what he was doing, he was explaining when he died on the cross, he was having the cup from God, the cup of God's wrath. It was going on to him. And that's what makes this reversal, so that the people who were rebels against God actually can be forgiven. Jesus, who had done no wrong, so he's not like Edom, because Edom had done wrong. Jesus, who had done no wrong, yet he took the wrath of God so that it wouldn't have to come on his people. He drank that cup so that we wouldn't have to drink that cup. God's wrath went onto him and was all used up onto him. So for God's people, there's no more wrath. We're safe. He took God's anger. And the Bible says as well, he brought a change in our hearts. He helped us to see beyond those outward things. He helped Christians to see that there's more to life than those things that were lost in Jerusalem. To have life with God that lasts when all else has failed or seems lost. It teaches us to want that. To be clinging to God and to know that he's enough, even if everything else should be lost. It's telling us to pursue that. So I think it's a difficult chapter, Lamentations chapter 4, this horrible, horrific description of suffering. But I think it's saying to us that sort of suffering can happen even to God's people. It will happen because of his wrath. And it's pointing us to something more important than all of those precious privileges that were lost for God's people then. The relationship with God, the heart relationship with God, that Jesus gives to us, and the freedom from his anger that Jesus gives as he suffers that anger for us. An extra comment about lamenting, because I said I hope that we'd learn about expressing sadness in suffering as we went through this book of Lamentations. The people of Israel were suffering at this time because of their sin. God's wrath was against them because of their sin, and it was a punishment. All of God's wrath for sin has gone on to Jesus now. So there is no suffering for that, but there is still suffering for God's people today. Suffering because we live in a world that's still broken. Suffering because we live in a world that hates Jesus and so will cause us trouble. And some suffering as well that God puts into our lives in order to teach us and make us grow up. So there is suffering, but not suffering of the sort they had, for the reason they had it. And we can learn as Christians how to react to that suffering. I've told this story before. Many people would say, I was a Christian when I was younger, but then this hard thing happened and I walked away. And one of the possible reasons they did that is they didn't know how to cope with hardships, or they'd never been taught. So we as Christians, we need to use the Bible, because there will be hardships in our lives, and let it teach us how to cope. Lamentations is all about sadness. Lament means godly speaking and groaning and praying. So what's the lesson from chapter 4? Well, part of the point is it's called that. It's called chapter 4. We've had three chapters already, and there's a fourth chapter. You think, well, maybe it wasn't one enough. No, there's actually five chapters in Lamentations, because grief goes on. And sometimes perhaps people are not ready for that. To know that grief might go, for some of us, grief stays raw for the rest of our lives. And we need to be honest and realistic about that. for others, grief might subside. And one thing about chapter 4 is it's slightly different from chapters 1, 2, and 3. It's a bit of a change. The agony is there, but in some way it's a little less muted. There's a little less crying out. It's a horrific description of the suffering, but there's less crying out. And there's a couple of reasons for this. One is the practical thing that in the first three chapters there's been talking about the suffering, and talking can help. Talking can help us to adjust and cope with a new situation, with bereavement, with a similar loss. And the second thing is that a big event in chapter 3. Chapter 3 began with words full of grief, but then the writer thought about God and remembered God in verse, if you turn back one page to verse 21. Actually, if I read from verse 19, I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. And what is it that he calls to mind? It's in the next verses. Because of the Lord's great love, we're not consumed, for his compassions never fail. So in chapter 4, there is still great grief and sadness, but it has changed slightly. The language has changed slightly. One of the reasons is they've been talking and talking and talking. A second reason is that they've remembered something of God. They're still full of sadness, not saying that it's gone away, but there's some little change. And those are lessons for us. As we struggle with our losses and our sufferings, and as we listen to others, those are things for us to know. I'll give you a chance for questions. It's such an odd part of the Bible. Does anyone have a question that that is in your mind as you've been sat there thinking that's so odd, or what's that doing there? No problem if there isn't a question, but. Okay, well, you can ask me privately afterwards if it comes to mind, or you've found the words to ask it, and you want to ask me afterwards. Let's ask God to help us respond. Let's have a moment's quiet, and then I'll lead us in praying. Almighty God, we thank you that the Bible helps us to see what really matters, to know that it's life with you that Jesus brings. He brings forgiveness for sin, and he brings us new hearts so that we can recognize, we can see what really matters. Please protect each of us as individuals, and protect us as a church group from being preoccupied by things that won't last and that don't matter as much. Please instead give us hearts that are in love with you, that treasure the privilege of being your children and being able to talk to you and see things your way. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.